Thanks as always for listening to Fluff and Crunch. In today's episode, because Chris and I have had some scheduling challenges because we are on opposite sides of the planet, I sit down with Al Spader, the lead writer for Star Trek Adventures Federation Klingon War Tactical Campaign book, which is just about out. We talk about what's in the book, a lot of the new character options, a really interesting section of optional and new rules, and we also talk about the big announcement in Star Trek Adventuresdom, which, unless you've been under a rock, you've probably heard of. But if you haven't, you'll have to listen to the end of the episode. Well, good morning, Al. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, your busy day. I know it's increasingly busy, and now we learn is probably going to get busier, to come on and talk about this this Klingon war book of yours. I really appreciate you giving some of your time.
Well, thanks for asking me to come on. I'm really excited. I listen to your podcast every week. So
thank you.
I'm excited to be a part of it.
Cool. Well, I want to start off before we dig into all things Star Trek Adventures, and especially this book, which I've been interested. I'm such a slobbering fanboy for Star Trek things that I'm interested in all the books that come out. But I'm really interested in this one because of, well, for a number of reasons. But before we jump into that, I want to talk just a little bit about like your gaming background. Like what, when got you into gaming? Like, what was the thing? What was that first thing you look back now and you're like, that was the first game, the first real game that I played that I like, what got you into this this hobby?
I think it was the AD&D Gold Box, which was something that I saw in Walden Books. Probably when I was in fourth grade. And I was like, oh, look at that dragon. I want this. And I saved up my allowance. I bought it, had no idea what it meant or anything like that. So I started like making characters for Dungeons & Dragons, whatnot. Never actually played until I got to high school. We started playing West End Games Star Wars.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. And in fact, my buddy who we used to play with just found the books that we used in high school in his attic and gave them to me. It was That's really cool.
That is so cool. Were you one of these people who made lots of characters and you imagined lots of, yeah, me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to make a character for, you know, every class. I wanted to, you know, again, not really understanding what role-playing was, but I knew that who the characters were and I wanted to try to make characters similar to that.
That's very cool. Yeah, D&D, the basic set, and then once Star Frontiers came out, I love fantasy stuff, but science fiction is always that's the bug that bites me. And we, you know, it's funny you mentioned about the WEGS Star Wars that came out in 87. Just a couple of years ago, a friend of mine actually my best friend from high school who now lives overseas. Several years ago, he found in like a box in some store in a storage container or something, he found a pile of our characters and notes from and sent that to me.
That's even cooler, yeah, dude.
So like I have my young senatorial character from West End version. It's in my giant locker of games in my garage.
Oh man, that's amazing. I'm so jealous of that.
It's so cool. Yeah, those things, it's neat too. I pick up the that piece of paper, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I played games with this like 36 years ago.
Yep.
It's neat.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Good stuff. So how, really quickly, before we get into the book and Star Trek Adventures, how did you get this great opportunity to work on Star Trek Adventures? Because I mean, honestly, this is like the gamer dream. You know what I mean?
It really is.
How'd you get there? How have you been able to do this?
So when fifth edition dropped, they opened a community created contact program where you could write basically adventures to premiere at conventions that were special for those conventions. So okay. I got involved with that a group called the Role Initiative, did like 10 or 12 missions for that. And that kind of went on the back burner. I got a little bit burnt out on fifth edition because I basically ran it every Saturday for 6 years.
That'll do it.
Then COVID hit and I started doing some Star Trek adventure stuff online. Specifically, are you familiar with Tabletop Simulator on Steam?
No, I think I've heard of it, but I am a complete Luddite, not necessarily by like choice, but I just the technology. I just don't do any online gaming.
So, So Tabletop Simulator is like an online board game space where you can like go and play Axis and Allies against friends. Somebody's like put the map in this 3D space and whatnot. And really, really cool. But someone did a Star Trek Adventures mod for it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to run my game on there. So I was doing that. And this was COVID had just hit. And so my friends and I were all sitting around this three-dimensional table playing Star Trek Adventures. Well, I took screenshots and posted them up on Facebook. And that's when Michael Dismuke saw them and asked me to come on to one of the panels that he was doing for his website. And lo and behold, Jim Johnson also happened to be on that panel. And I guess the way what I presented and what I said impressed them both. And Jim actually, just after that, had both Michael and I write some mission briefs. And that was our doorway in.
It's crazy. Years ago, I had a gentleman actually who was one of my, who's my favorite high school teacher that I had. And I you know this, I taught for a long time. I know you as well. His professional advice to me, and this was years after high school and college, and we had actually connected on a professional level, was like, do what you're doing and do it well, and eventually the attention will come your way.
That's what ended up happening. Jim said we got our I got my my writing in early, not on time, but early, and it was always high quality. He didn't have to edit it much. And so that was when he kept asking me to do more and more and eventually take on lead writer on the Federation Klingon War book.
That is so excellent. That is so cool. Congratulations. And I mean, and you know, obviously there's a team of people who are consistently pouring good work into this game universe. And so thanks for doing that,
because I appreciate that.
I think this stuff is really high quality. And I've played a bunch of Star Trek games over the years, and this is definitely the, you know, by a long shot, the winner on so many different levels.
I would agree.
So let's talk about this Klingon War book. First off, question, how long is it? I don't have
It's about 230 pages-ish. It's seven chapters. Mm-hmm. We start, as we do with all of our books, with some player options. And then we get towards the middle of the book, we introduce what the tactical overlay, which we'll get into in a few minutes. And then there's the story, which is the stuff you'll be role-playing through. And then we wrap it up with like allies and adversaries and starships.
And when you talk about character options, you're are more other species?
So yeah, so we have six species, new species life paths, one of which is the Enar, and then which a lot of people recognize from Strange New Worlds. And then we got five like really deep cut weird aliens that were like in the backgrounds of the movies. Okay. So like that's really, really cool to see. There were people that were really shocked at some of the species that we put in there. They're like, oh, that's from one scene in Star Trek One. Like, you know, so that was cool. And then there's like optional rules to play during wartime. So one of the things that we recognized very early on was that Star Trek Adventures, for the most part, we promote it as a narrative game, right? We promote it as character driven, and you can still be character driven while participating in wartime stories, right? I mean, some of the best movies that come out about war are really character driven. So our concept early on was to provide options on how to do that in the Star Trek universe.
Okay. All right. So you got these additional options. You've got, I mean, on the back end, the stuff we're going to talk about the tactical campaign, those rules. And I think you're right. Absolutely. I mean, you look at things like, I mean, great series like Band of Brothers, you know, is a story about individuals, but it's also a story about war and the individuals in that war. So, I mean, it's, yeah, that totally makes sense. I don't think that, you know, if you just want to play a game, if you want to play a war game or a war related game without character, just play a war game.
Right. Yeah. So one of the things that got added in is something called the scars and trauma system. So basically, if you experience an event during the war, you can choose to take on a scar, and that can be a physical scar. It can be a mental scar. And scars act as like really like negative complications that are attached to traits. So your star goes in your trait line, and that complication is always there as you're trying to proceed. And there are ways to get rid of the scars through the leveling up system and whatnot. Yeah. But it's just a cool way to show that and reflect it on your character.
How familiar are you with the scar system from Octon Cthulhu?
So Michael Duxbury, who wrote the system, said he wants to be very clear that he doesn't want to equate it to like some of the mythos type trauma that you can have. But there are some similarities between the two.
Okay.
This particular system has to do with, is really connected to your values. Okay. So essentially, you can gain the benefit of sacrificing a value without actually sacrificing it if you're using your scar. The value is still there. You're just not following it anymore, and it sticks around. It's an interesting concept that Michael brought into the game.
Well, you get me thinking about actual characters. Like I think about Ben Sisko's interactions with Jean-Luc Picard at the very beginning of Deep Space Nine, and how that clearly having his ship blown out from under him and having his wife killed in the process, all that. I mean, I think that fits the description perfectly. So it's one of those great, it sounds to me like it's one of those great examples that I think Star Trek Adventures does very well of taking something in the system, defining something mechanically, but then using it as this translation into the narrative.
Yeah, and Ben Sisko
complement one another.
Ben Sisko is right at the front of it when we were designing the stuff, and then Strange New Worlds came out season two with Mbenga. They actually showed some more of that type of trauma, and we were like, oh, that was a happy accident, because we didn't even know that was coming when this was being written. But we were looking at Ben Sisko specifically when talking about trauma, because he clearly had scars.
Oh yeah,
you know, after that.
Oh yeah, for sure. So when I heard of let me zoom back to the big picture here. When I heard of this book, I thought, hey, cool, you know, Klingon War, all it's of an era that, you know, is not well defined, and not a lot of attention has been paid to it in series and movies and things. It gets mentioned, or at least this time period gets mentioned. But I got to thinking, okay, campaign book. And I started thinking about the Shackleton Expanse campaign book, which I have. And we did a review of ages ago when it came out. How is this comparable to, similar to, different from that? So if someone owns Shackleton Expanse in terms of how the book is put together and what a player or GM could do with it, how does this measure up to that?
So I think that, so this is a campaign book that follows a pretty regimented order, because these events do happen in Star Trek Discovery season one. So you're telling a parallel story to what Discovery was doing, because they're gone for like half the war or three quarters of the war or whatever in the Mirror Universe. So like this is like wide open territory to tell a cool story, but there are still minor events that are mentioned along the way. So as you are doing this campaign, those minor events are still happening. And it's set up there are six basically missions, the war is told in three stages: early war, mid war, and late war. And each stage has two missions that you play through, and then there are eight optional mission briefs that you could also turn into missions there. So it's a very linear, it's a lot more linear, I think, than Shackleton Expanse story. But the big thing is this what we've called like the tactical overlay. So if you're familiar with Band of Blades at all, have you heard of that game? So
I've heard of Blades in the Dark. Is it?
Yeah, it's a Blades in the Dark game. Okay. Yeah. So it's basically you're a group of warriors that are fighting this never-ending war, and you go out and do individual missions and you role play through them. And then you come to this strategy stage. And the strategy stage is you're starting to look at the bigger picture. Like you're looking at the entire map, not just where your characters are. And so we've introduced something similar in the tactical campaign, where once you finish a mission, you then zoom out to this like galactic scale assigning assets type role-playing thing. So essentially you start playing admirals and you like you generate assets in different ships and different characters, and you say, all right, well, something's happening over at this system and it looks like this asset can handle that best, so you send it over there. And that plays out in turns as well.
And then I'm assuming then you would, you know, so you do that as a phase sorts, mm-hmm. and then you would move into the next mission brief or mission within that six mission sequence that you just talked of. So it's this kind of like I don't know if it's an iterative process, but I mean, it's like an alternating process.
Yes.
Big picture,
yeah, it's a zoom
picture.
In, zoom out type thing. Wow. You have the option of, so when you are playing through the strategy phase, you've got all these points of interest that start popping up, which are little problems that you got to deal with. Mm-hmm. You have an option, if you want, to role play through one of those points of interest, if you would like, okay. using one of the mission briefs that are provided in the book.
Slick.
Yeah. So like for me, like when I'm playing board games and I see like something that gets out of control and I'm like, there's no way I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. If you see that at your table, you're like, that's the mission we're going to role play. Mm-hmm. And then we'll use our assets for everything else.
That's interesting. You know, did you ever play Pathfinder?
Yeah.
Like first edition?
Yeah. Yeah. I played first edition more than second.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I've played second edition all of one session. And that was quite enough. Did you ever play I know I've mentioned this a bunch of times on the show, but did you ever play through the Kingmaker AP?
So I've never played through it, no, but I've heard about it and I've heard people talk about it. And I was actually going to ask you the question if it seems like similar to that.
It does actually, because you know the six book series in that, the kingdom management rules pick up in book two.
Okay.
And for the remaining five books of the series, unless the players are extraordinarily unlucky or extraordinarily dumb, the kingdom is going to grow. But the idea then is that as a group, you, in a given month, you spend, you know, like half or so, maybe a little more than half the time, the idea is narratively, that is the player characters are doing kingdom stuff. They're like the king and the leader of like magic study, you know, these different roles in the kingdom and or realm, whatever you want to call it. And then the assumption is that you handle all those kinds of things, and there are tables on which you roll for like kingdom events, like, oh, was it a good harvest this year, or did something strange happen, was there a crime spike, whatever, and then the assumption is that some of the characters' time will be taken up, like, oh, we got to saddle up again because here's a problem that's facing us, and only the player characters can handle those things, and those are the things that are the like one-to-one scale that's written in each of the books. And obviously those grow in like importance and there's interplay between what the player characters do. Like when their kingdom gets attacked for the first time by some probing forces from a neighboring realm and the PCs have to go out and, you know, saddle up and deal with it. Well, that obviously has interplay with the bigger picture, the more narrative kingdom rules. So it sounds very similar, actually, this back and forth. And as the campaign continues, you move back and forth between I'm viewpoint through my character and I'm viewpoint with the rest of the players looking at the big picture.
Yeah, that it does sound very, very similar, even with the tables and such, right down to that. So like the assets that you generate are random, the events are random, the points of interest that pop up are random. And so like it could be like a military type mission that pops up. It could be an exploration mission that pops up. It could be a routine mission, right? Because the Federation still needs to function.
Yeah, they got Federation stuff to do.
Yeah, and then there's also called unknown points of interest, which I really, really interesting. So like you get a random signal. You don't know what's there. You have to assign assets to it, but you don't know what it is until you've assigned your assets already. So that one's kind of a good one.
Yeah, you know, that sounds so much like, and I won't go on and on about Kingmaker, but there are so many things like you could roll on a table. And I actually remember in our campaign 10, 12 years ago, rolling like, you know, there's a crime spike in one of your cities. And we decided, hey, let's play a little bit of that out. Like how's law enforcement dealing with that? And so we went, you know, I just made that up and we just worked through it. That's neat. I mean, and I think that the richest campaigns are the ones that and this is tough, it's really tough on a GM, but I think the richest campaigns are the ones wherein the world is active and evolving, and the world is doing things. There are things happening off the stage, and sometimes they're points of interest, and sometimes they encroach onto the stage, or the players on the stage decide we need to do something about that. And that's when it feels like it's breathing. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, if you don't deal with points of interest, sometimes your assets aren't usable next turn because they have to go deal with them, you know, things like that. What's really, really cool is that the missions that you role play through in the role play section have success and failure criteria that add bonuses to the overlay, the strategic overlay. Okay. So if you succeeded in doing such and such during the role play session, you get one more asset for, you know, the strategic session. Michael Duxbury, who also wrote the last mission of the story, he, which takes place after all of the turns in the overlay have happened, he actually says, all right, well, if you have assets left over, they're going to show up here. If you have momentum left over, it's going to show up here. And like all of this stuff comes together in the final role play experience, which is so cool.
So this is interesting because I think there's terrific opportunity in something that's very open-ended and sandboxy. And I think that Shackleton Expanse is that. Like you can rearrange things and pick and choose. And I remember like a year or so ago when I was thinking about, oh, I'd like to run this with my group. We ended up shelving it and doing something different. But I remember looking through all the missions and looking at all the mission briefs and thinking about, okay, which ones do I want to do and in what sequence? And, you know, and so you have this wide open set of possibilities. There's a lot of opportunity in that. On the other hand, there's also a lot of opportunity in something that is more structured and not to say in a negative way at all, linear. You know, it's, you can loosen it, but if you just don't have the time or the inclination to build from all these separate pieces and parts. So when you talk about how this is more structured, it's more linear, it is more sequential, but it also sounds like it's really flexible. I mean, you could pick and choose what you want to add to it and when you want to zoom in and out.
Yeah, it is super flexible. In fact, you can just play through the story. If you don't care for the strategy phase or the tactical overlay, you don't need to play that, right? Vice versa, you don't need to do the role playing. If you just want to play like a Star Trek asset assigning activity, you could do that. Like just role play that section. The other thing that we did is we made sure that like the random tables that are included in that strategy phase are universal and they're not necessarily just about the Federation Klingon War.
Okay. I was going to ask you about that, actually.
With the exception of characters and ships, we did fill with people that were around during that time frame and ships that were around during that time frame. So if you wanted to, like, literally take this overlay, move it to the Shackleton Expanse, and run the Tilikal Saga with it, it would be super easy to do. You would just have to make up the character assets, and we provide the rules on how to do that. Which is awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, I mean, like, how would you adapt this? How could you, in other words, based on what's in the book, and how would you yourself adapt this to another era? I mean, I was thinking, hey, you know, you've got the Klingon War. I mean, this precedes the original series in terms of like the canon, quote unquote, you know, timeline. But I mean, could you do this? Do you see this being adaptable to, say, the Dominion War or adaptable to even earlier, like late Enterprise, you know, the Romulan War? How flexible do you think it is in that? How would you go about doing that?
I think it is pretty flexible, Jeremy. Like I was talking with someone about trying to do the Zindi War using the format. So the Klingon War is set up in three stages, early war, mid war, and late war, and each stage has three turns. Well, the Zindi War was a smaller type thing, so you might only do, one stage with maybe four turns in it. You know what I mean? Whereas if you go to the Dominion War, that's a lot longer. It takes place over, you know, several years. You've got pre-war stuff that you might want to make a part of it. And you can absolutely do that. The only thing that you would need to do is look at the character assets, which is a D20 table, and come up with 20 characters who were around during the Dominion War, fill those out, come up with 20 ships that were around the Dominion War, fill those out. And then you can literally use the entire tactical campaign as it is. Or what I would probably do is I would probably, instead of early war, mid war, late war, I would probably add a pre-war and a post-war stage as well. And maybe keep 3 turns per stage as you travel through the war.
Yeah, I think that would make sense for the Dominion War, especially because of all the infiltration and the penetration perpetrated by the Dominion that set the stage for the war. You'd want to take that into account. Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and then on top of all of that, you know, we include, probably 40 pages of optional rule sets that'll make your game feel more tactical, more like a tactical game. For example, like we put rules in there for rolling initiative, for those people coming from other games that prefer to have a rolled initiative. Really, really cool with starships, right? Because the smaller ships act first, the bigger ships act last, like things like that. Those optional rules are in there. One thing that I'm really proud of is that we got in the rules for power management, because power is just a number on your character on your ship character sheet right now that really doesn't do much. But I put in a system where you assign those power points to each of your systems.
Did you play FOSSA Star Trek many years
ago? I didn't. However, I did do a lot of research into FOSSA and Starfleet battles.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that through introducing these rules, maybe it might bring in some people that played the old FOSSA tactical simulator or the Starfleet battles. You know,
because I remember, and I still have most of my FOSSA stuff, the core stuff. I have the big deluxe boxed set, and I remember the one page forms that had these little counters. You've probably seen PDFs of these, and you're tracking how many shield points and this and that. And it felt, because it was tactile, it felt like you could suspend disbelief and like feel like you're moving stuff around on your control panels and whatnot. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I was thinking if I was an engineer and I had the ship character sheet in front of me, I could just take a D6 and put like, oh, there's 2 power at this station, 1 power at this station, 2 power at this station, 3 here. And what happens is whenever you use a station to assist on a roll, it takes 1 power from that station.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That's simple.
And so it gives the engineer a lot more things to pay attention to and to do. Because I've heard a lot of people saying that their engineer doesn't do much when it gets to space combat. So I was all right.
It's tough. I think sometimes I think for really experienced and motivated Star Trek fans, there's always a thing to find. There's always something you can figure out to do. But it does, Starship combat does present a challenge with people who are less familiar with Star Trek. So they're like, what am I doing? You know, we're in combat. I'm supposed to be pulling a trigger or something like that. If you're playing original series era, like what does the communication officer do?
Right.
So, right.
We also did, if you want to do mass combat, like 5 ships versus 5 ships or something like that. We wrote in rules. We adapted them from Homeworld. Where each player can control 1 starship instead of focusing on what they're doing on the bridge. They're each controlling their own starship during combat. So lots of really cool options in there like that.
Well, I remember, was it the Command Division book that had some like vague ideas about running an Admiralty campaign?
Yeah. And they talked about wings and things like that. Yeah.
It sounds like you've taken that and fleshed it out with a lot more detail that you can act, because I remember looking at that and thinking, okay, this is it was good, but I didn't feel like it was anything that like someone sitting at their table wouldn't have just kind of come up with anyway.
Yeah, I
this
think
sounds
like
there's so much more.
Yeah, and if you read through the optional rules, it makes a lot of sense, especially if you're familiar with other game systems, because I really tried to look at a few when we were designing this.
I'm happy with on ramps for other people.
Right, because people coming in from D&D are like, wait, I don't roll initiative? How does that work?
Yeah.
You know?
Why am I not counting squares?
Yep. Yep, exactly that.
Yeah.
So,
let me see. Let me think here. So you think that this could be easily adapted to other eras, other events within Star Trek? There are, you know, you can as you wish balance between the traditional one player, one character, call that the ground level, versus the big picture, the Admiralty level, the fleet level. You can go back and forth between that. And it sounds to me like then those rules, the rules that are for the bigger picture, are easily transferable to other big events, either that exist within Star Trek canon, or if you want to have your own crazy war or something like that, you could do that.
I would argue that they could also just be adapted to any 2D20 game.
Sure.
You know, like if you wanted to do the Butlerian Jihad for Dune, like, you know, things like that, it would pretty easily adapt to that as well.
Interesting. Now, okay, this is if you don't have an answer for this, or you don't feel like answering it, I'll just edit this out. No one will ever know it was asked. Do you think that these rules could be adapted for not starship combat, but like ground combat?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they can. Yep.
Oh boy. Okay. Yep. See, I've been beating my head on a wall periodically over mass combat rules for my 2D20 fantasy game, Eris. And I've not been satisfied. I'm happy with the skirmish rules, like, you know, 30-40, but you get into like large army size and I have not been satisfied with that. So, okay. So that checks another box as to why I probably need to buy this book.
Yeah. And what it becomes is your character is now a general of this, you know, this unit,
right,
on this flank. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that, and kind of controls those the way they are. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. What kind of setting background? One of the is included in this book, because I mean, obviously, it's about the Klingon War. There is an era. There's a set of years into which this plugs. I've always been happy with the story content, the world, the universe content that all these books have provided. I mean, you probably listened to when the Discovery campaign guide came out. Like, I'm not a fan of Discovery, actually, but I love the book. It's a terrific book. What kind of world background, and I loved reading that world background, is in this book? About how much?
So I'll be completely clear. There's not a ton.
Okay.
And because a lot of this information is already presented in the Discovery book.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
So like it happens during Discovery season one. So we do provide a closer timeline of events of what happened during the war, and what happened to set off those events and what happened after. But we don't really delve into what's going on in the world of Discovery. And the reason why we did that, Jeremy, is because, and the reason why we chose this war in general is because we want this to become your story and not the story of the hero ship.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, Discovery is gone for 2/3 of this war. So now there's plenty of space for us to create hero ships with our players. And that's kind of our mindset when we were going into it, and really wanted to focus on the options. I would say the number of times Discovery is mentioned in this book is less than 20. Like, it is, you know, it does happen during that time frame. But we just wanted to focus on providing a war story for a hero ship that, you know, players create.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's if you want to take part in someone else's story, read a book. You know, if you want to be an active player at a table, and you want to be a GM who enjoys, I came up with these ideas and I threw them at my players, and then my players confounded me by coming back with these responses, and we together built this thing that wasn't so. It didn't exist beforehand, and it took all of us to do. Yeah, you don't want to play through like, well, then you're going to have this battle, and then this battle, and then this battle, and this is where, you know, the existing hero ship comes and, you know,
Elminster's,
you know, bails you out, you know, shows up like Dungeon Master, you know, in the last, you don't want that. So that's,
I remember there was a video game that I played on, it might have been Xbox or 360 or something like that, called Middle Earth, the Third Age. And you were playing like an elf, a dwarf, you know, a human that are going on this mission, but they weren't the main characters from Lord of the Rings. But every now and then their paths crossed those main characters. And so like, it was like they would go away from the Lord of the Rings story and then they would come back and then they would connect. So like, I think that I remember fighting in the caves of Barad-dûr and seeing the main cast like run over the bridge above. Like, and then they run off and they do their thing. And then you have to finish telling your story. And I feel like that's kind of what this is set up like you are doing your thing. There are canon events that we call scripted events that are either read out or handed to players or whatnot that happen in the series. So you can keep a sense of time,
sure,
but you don't interact with those. They're just presented to you so that you can tell where you are in the story.
Yeah, that's and what that does then is I think it gives the players an opportunity to feel like the line between what you're doing as a group at the table and what we've seen on the shows and in the movies, the line blurs, which I think then can inject some real energy and life and excitement into the table, but it doesn't allow, you're not creating a situation where like, you know, the canon characters show up as a little band of Mary Sue's and solve everybody's problems. And you're like, why am I here?
Right.
You know, I'm just going to eat more popcorn and play with my phone some more. Why am I even sitting at this table? That's,
yep.
Wow. Okay. So I'm jazzed. I was interested before, and now I am. I'm feeling compelled. That's annoying because then that means I'll spend money. But that's okay. That's okay. Then that sends a positive signal to you folks in Modiphius to continue producing this good stuff. Let me ask you just a couple of things as we head toward wrapping up. What's maybe like your favorite character option, rule, idea, something new that's in this book that you're really excited about because you want to see what people do with it, or you're excited about using it yourself?
So I did mention the power allocation rules. I think that's really going to be cool.
It is. That's cool.
But hidden in the chapter 7, I think it is, in the starship chapter, I wrote the rules for swarms of ships. Okay. So if you want to play like a swarm of little ships. Mm-hmm. There are now rules for that where you create a scale for them and how it is to deal with them. Cause that has happened a couple of times in Star Trek. So we have rules there to kind of tell that type of story now, if you wanted to introduce a species that prefers to use swarm instead of big, huge starships.
Or just like little tiny, like pinprick type ships against something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. In theory, you could even do a swarm of galaxy class ships if you wanted to, but that would be terrifying to see.
That would be a little on the big side. What do you plan on doing with this book yourself, with all your extra time?
Right.
Surplus time out there. What do you think you're going to do with it?
Here's the thing that's kind of cool. This book, we started production over 2 years ago.
Oh.
When we folks first keep good got secrets. These tactical rules.
You keep good secrets. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, we try. So are you familiar with 5 parsecs from home and 5 leagues from the borderlands?
I have not played them, but I have a friend of mine who loves them a lot, and so I know something about them, yeah.
So Ivan Sorensen, who wrote those books, he was the one that developed the tactical system, the strategy phase.
Nice.
He basically gave me a skeleton and said, hey, I'm not super familiar with Star Trek. Could you take this and adapt it to Star Trek? And I was like, absolutely.
You betcha.
So I kept in touch with him back and forth for about 6 months during playtesting and whatnot. And I think we ended on something really, really cool. So what I would love to do, I would love to take just the Admiralty strategy phase tactical overlay and create a Discord server where all the players on the Discord are working together as admirals. But then instead of assigning assets to the points of interest, we have people go in and use captain's log at each point of interest to tell their story about what's happening there. I would love to see something like that happen. Wow. Again, that might be a bit more than I can manage right now, but I would love to do something like that.
You know, and I was going to ask you about where do you see the potential for overlap between Captain's Log and this, because like I have here, full disclosure, I have neither. Did I run Star Trek? I don't know. No, actually, I have neither run nor played Star Trek Adventures in like, golly, like over a year and a half.
Yeah.
Almost a year and a half, actually. When we finished our a season of our campaign at the end of 2022, that was the last time I played it. And so Captain's Log has come out. Chris, my podcast buddy, and I have played. We played through a story, an episode of that. But every time I look in that book, I'm like, oh my gosh, one day when I'm running Star Trek Adventures again, this is going to be my little brain trust here. This is going to be my council of elders. I'm going to open up the little door and say, what the heck is going on this planet that they just decided to fly by? You know what? Yeah,
that's the best thing that Captain's Log is for. Like, hey, I need a weird animal for my players to see. They're stuck on this planet. Let's just roll a bunch of dice and see what it is.
Back to your idea of an Admiralty Discord campaign. It's interesting because it would take the idea of like a living campaign, like a managed living campaign, and it takes a different spin on it because it'd be living, but it would be, I don't know what the word, it would be like a, you know, it sounds like a bunch of, I'm not a huge jazz fan, but it'd be a bunch of jazz musicians who are like, okay, what key are we going to start in?
Yep.
And they all kind of know what they're doing, and they're all working from the same general framework, but everything is just improvisation within certain accepted limits moving forward. Wow.
Yeah, I think we could come up with there would be some really cool stories to come out of that.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know what would be really cool with something like that too? And this is like, you know, the crazy, overly ambitious, time-sucking, I need to be retired to do this GM ideas that I think we all have
someday.
That would be something that even someone who's not playing could just go through and read it and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to steal this idea and I'm going to be inspired by this idea. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential there. And I'm quite sure that there's going to be somebody out there who comes up with something that I never even thought of. You know what I mean? Because that's what always ends up happening.
Totally. I think that's wonderful, though. I mean, when you take a creative idea and you throw it out, and then other people go, but what about this? And you're like, oh my gosh, I would have never, I didn't even consider it from that angle. And then that gives you some inspiration that they didn't have. And then it grows.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a couple of cool things that I was happy about is this is the first book that right up front has a content warning for the Star Trek line, because I felt like if anything was going to need that, it was this book. And then we also have a player sensitivity checklist to go over during session zero. Hey, what type of stories are you okay with during war? What are you not okay with during war? You know, things like that.
How much mass destruction can you stomach?
Right, right. Yeah. You know, I don't want to see kids blown up.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to do that in this game. So I was excited that we got both of those in there as well.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's... All right, so I'm officially excited. What is is this available now? Here it is.
The PDF is available. So if you pre-order through Modiphius, they'll give you the PDF as they normally do. It sounds like maybe towards the end of March the PDF will be on sale and the books will be here in the U.S., but that is always subject to change.
Sure, sure. So you're talking of this is like early spring.
Yes.
Early to mid-spring is when we could expect maybe this mid-spring that it'll start showing up in stores and we can leaf through it at the things like that if they're not shrink-wrapped. Okay. You know, it's funny, as we're wrapping up here and we're talking about things that are available and what release schedules and whatnot, you know, we said we were going to mention this at the beginning.
Might as well, right?
And then we didn't, but we really need to. Here it is. It is 26 February on which we're recording, and I get hit with on the Modiphius Discord server the announcement of
Star Trek Adventures Second Edition Phase 2 is coming. How funny is that like 40 minutes before we go to click record, like, you know, Discord's been blowing up, Facebook's been blowing up, but so a lot of people have been piecing together, wait, What do you mean that the starter set is no longer available? What do you mean that the core rulebook is no longer in production?
Wait, hold the phone. Because I haven't been playing it yet. So, okay, I have the original core rulebook. I have the tricorder box as well, and I have the Klingon rulebook, and I have the starter set. So the core rulebook and the starter set are not in print anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
How long has that been? I had no idea.
Only for the last month and a half, couple months. Actually, the starter set might have been longer than that. But there's been some people complaining about it online and asking if we were going to be going back to print on it and whatnot.
Like, Mom.
So the announcement this morning was that we are moving into a second edition. It is backwards compatible with first edition. It sounds like they announced that the core rulebook will be available at Gen Con. With a starter set to follow a little bit thereafter. There's a site, if you go to Modiphius, you can sign up for email updates, because it sounds like we're going to slowly reveal information over the next few months as we start finalizing the product and the pitch.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to that page in the notes for this on both the pod and YouTube. And I just, as you were saying that, I scanned quickly over the email that I just got 37 minutes ago from Modiphius announcing this. Says it's backwards compatible and offers, quote, an updated and streamlined version of the 2D20 system rules designed for an authentic Star Trek experience. I won't ask you what that means because know, or you're not supposed to tell people what you don't. I'm not even going to pry.
Well, you can think, I mean, we use the word streamlined a lot in the past, so you can think about that. And the rules were still, I got to play test them for the better part of a year. I guess the play testing was 3 months. Pretty excited to see what they look like when they're all finally done. The other thing is, with that, we've got the license for Strange New Worlds and Prodigy now. So
that's excellent. And it says that in the email that, you know, it, you can play in any era, and it explicitly it name drops those two as being, you know, you can play in those worlds.
And the cover is beautiful. You got the shot of the Enterprise from Strange New Worlds. And was it not in the email?
Wait.
I'll send
oh,
you.
Oh, no, you do. Yeah. Okay. So there is a picture of like this crew in all different eras, uniforms, on some strange new world with the Enterprise in the background. That's what I'm looking at right here in the email itself.
Yeah, and I think the press release also mentioned that there'll be multiple species to play with from start, which is pretty cool. Because in the original core rulebook, there were some species that you couldn't play as. It was very much, this is a Starfleet point of view. So now we're going to open that up as well, which is cool.
So now, is this then, does this... Do you know if this supplants the Klingon rulebook?
So what I believe will happen is that all rulebooks will be usable depending on what edition you want to play.
Okay.
It's a very simple adaption from 1E to 2E. And we even in the 2E core rulebook have very specific, like, do this, this, and this.
Okay.
And now you're okay to play second edition with your first edition stuff.
So it's more like a couple, it's more... It sounds to me like you're saying it's tweaks, not like like modifications, like going from, say, AD&D to third edition or fourth
edition. Right. It's not a full-scale overhaul of the rules. Basically, it's been going on for 7 years. In 7 years, Modiphius has had a ton of books.
They've learned a
drop,
lot.
And we've learned a lot of different things that were successful along the way. And so now we're trying to reincorporate that into a new vision with second edition. So
very, very, very cool.
I'm excited to see what people think as we start revealing more and more of the information. I don't know what that timetable looks like, unfortunately.
You've not been briefed in yet. I got brought to a secure undisclosed location. What?
I got my talking points emailed to me this morning saying, All right, here's the things that we're mentioning now. We'll figure out what's going on later. Sure. So
right on. Okay, this is very cool, and it's two neat things that, you know, this is obviously way forward looking, but this Klingon War book is far more immediate. So again, there are links to this Star Trek Second Edition announcement. I'll put links to the Klingon book on Modiphius' site there as well, and Al, thanks so much. I mean, like I said at the beginning, thank you so much for your work in this stuff, because anything, you know, we got good people pouring work into a great property that I think people are doing terrific things with.
Yeah. And I'd be remiss to not thank you for all the things that we went back and forth on with the World Builder stuff too. Like that, you know, everybody's still learning there and, you know, so I appreciate that, you know, hitting you up and saying, hey, what do you think of this?
Well, hey, you know, absolutely. And you know what, if you could give me the magic trick for how do you proofread 200 some odd pages of your own text painfully, that's the only way you do it.
Really, read it out loud. That's the best you can do.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, that's a sad and true true statement. Well, this is excellent. Like I said, thanks for your time, thanks for your work, and maybe after this thing comes out and I get my hands on it, we'll do a follow up.
We can talk through some things. Anytime,
because I would love to actually. I'm maybe this doesn't sound properly Star Trekian, but I'm really interested in this tactical system for the purpose of seeing how could you do that for like land warfare.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Awesome.
All right. So go out and buy Star Trek books, folks. Play Star Trek, watch Star Trek. It's good for you.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord, you can subscribe to the podcast, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again, have a great day, and we look forward to talking with you.